Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, September 17th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Charles Capone found guilty of murder. Wilderness Act co-author Stuart Brandberg gives a talk at the Wilderness Gateway Campground celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, and Moscow playwright wins big MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A Moscow jury deliberated 9 hours total before finding 53-year-old Charles A. Capone of Moscow guilty today of first-degree murder in the April 2010 disappearance of his estranged wife, Rachel Anderson. According to the Lewiston Tribune website, the jury deliberated 4 hours yesterday and 5 hours today. The jury also found Capone guilty of failure to notify a coroner or law enforcement officer about a death, and conspiracy to fail to notify a coroner or law enforcement officer about a death. Prosecution witness David A. Stone has already pled guilty to failure to notify a coroner or law enforcement officer about a death and is expected to have a murder charge against him dropped as part of a plea deal made in exchange for his testimony. Based mainly on Stone's testimony, prosecutors told the jury Stone witnessed Capone strangling Anderson outside the walls of his shop in the 1220 block of South Main Street in Moscow the evening of April 16, 2010, and helped Capone wrap the body in a tarp and throw it off the Red Wolf Crossing Bridge at Clarkston. In the 4.5 years since Anderson's disappearance, law enforcement has not been able to locate her body. At the time of the killing, Anderson was living in Clarkston and had visited Capone at his shop to pick up her vehicle, which he was working on. Capone did not want a divorce and had given Anderson a 3-day ultimatum to decide on the divorce. Witnesses said Anderson had recently decided to follow through with the divorce and had told friends Capone would rather kill her than go through with it. The Tribune reports Anderson's family were audibly relieved when the verdict was announced this afternoon. Presiding Judge Carl B. Carrick said he expects to sentence Capone in 2.5 to 3 months. Carrick said he will wait at least a week before setting a date for a pre-sentencing hearing. Moscow-born playwright Samuel Hunter is one of 21 winners of John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Genius Grants this year. The grant for Hunter is $625,000. The 33-year-old Hunter wrote the 2012 off-Broadway play The Whale, which told the story of a 600-pound writing teacher who is eating himself to death. He also wrote the play A Bright New Boise. Hunter was raised in Moscow and now lives in New York City. Hunter told the Associated Press the prize will not change his work much, but will give him more time and freedom to devote himself to writing plays in a huge way. Hunter said, "I'm not writing screenplays that are being made into $100 million films. These are very small, contained, quiet plays, and they don't make a ton of money. But for the next several years, that's not a concern." A Spokane grand jury has indicted 6 men in a murder-for-hire scheme that led to the death of businessman Doug Carlisle last December. The 63-year-old Carlisle was shot in his home as his wife fled to an upstairs room December 15th. The Spokesman Review website reports one of those indicted was 34-year-old James Henriksen of North Dakota, who prosecutors say hired Timothy Suckow of Spokane Valley to stalk and kill Carlisle. Henriksen was a business partner of Carlisle's, who family members say threatened Carlisle's life in a dispute over a Bakken oil drilling operation investment. Investigators say Henriksen said Carlisle owed him about $2 million. The other men indicted were Todd D. Bates, Robert A. Delio, Lazaro T. Pacina, and Bobby J. Warrer. Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad says it wants to build a second bridge over Lake Pendere south of Sandpoint to handle the expected increase in coal and oil rail traffic traveling the busy main line between the West Coast and the energy-producing areas to the east. Currently, the Burlington Northern Bridge, which runs parallel to the U.S. Highway 95 bridge, carries about one train every half hour. The nearly mile-long bridge also is used by Montana Rail Link trains from Missoula, which join Burlington Northern Santa Fe's High Line to the east of Sandpoint. The current bridge was built in 1905. Burlington Northern Santa Fe's proposed second rail bridge would be 50 feet to the west of the current bridge and would travel 4,800 feet over the waters of Lake Pendere. The trestle's piers would be sunk 150 feet into the lake bed. The plan includes adding nearly a mile of parallel tracks through the city of Sandpoint. Sandpoint Mayor Kerry Logan told the Spokesman Review the new tracks would add to the risk of accidents. Bakken crude oil trains in particular have been involved in fiery accidents, often involving large explosions in recent years. Logan told the paper the oil trains are, quote, huge safety concerns for the city. In the case of an accident, Logan said the city and Bonner County officials would be initial responders because the railroad's emergency crews and equipment are at least 2 hours away. Burlington Northern Santa Fe says their tracks carry between 2 to 3 trains per day with Bakken crude oil from North Dakota. The route also currently carries 3 to 4 mile-long trains from the Powder River coal fields of eastern Montana and northern Wyoming. Burlington Northern Santa Fe spokesperson Gus Malonis said the railroad plans to put an oil containment trailer in Sandpoint next year and has mobile trailers containing firefighting foam stationed in the region. Logan said that is insufficient, she told the paper, so it's very poor preparedness for what I see as not a possibility, but the eventuality of an accident happening here. You just can't increase these volumes like that and not expect something to happen. Environmental watchdogs are also concerned about pollution from coal trains poisoning the lake. Sandpoint City Councilmember Shannon Williamson, who is also Lake Pendere Waterkeeper Executive Director, said they have analyzed water samples which show coal from trains has gotten into the lake, Williamson told the Spokesman Review, while BNSF purports that a second bridge will help alleviate existing train congestion. I believe that it will more likely open the floodgates to service the coal and oil industries, which already dominate the tract and crowd out other commodities. The new trestle will need approval from a number of state and federal agencies. Seattle emergency managers have sent a report to the city council saying there must be more preparation to prevent or respond to an oil train accident in the city, especially in the city's antiquated downtown rail tunnel. The report says a fire, explosion, or spill involving an oil train, quote, would be a catastrophe for our community in terms of risk to life, property, and environment. Report authors Seattle Office of Emergency Management Director Barb Graff and Assistant Fire Chief A.D. Vickery wrote the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad can take on a number of projects as the rail line increases the number of Bakken crude oil trains running through the 100-year-old rail tunnel under downtown Seattle. Those would include installing radio communications in the tunnel, fire suppression systems, and permanent ventilation systems. The tunnel currently carries 1 or 2 mile-long trains per day carrying volatile Bakken crude oil from North Dakota. The trains, which also travel through Sandpoint, Spokane, and the Tri-Cities, are bound for refineries north of Seattle. Republican U.S. Representative Raul Labrador of Idaho has introduced a bill prohibiting the military from sending certain surplus equipment to civilian police forces in the U.S. According to the Spokesman Review, Labrador said, "Our nation was founded on the principle of a clear line between the military and civilian policing. The Pentagon's current surplus property program blurs that line by introducing a military model of overwhelming force in our cities and towns. Our bill would restore the focus of law enforcement on protecting citizens and providing due process for the accused. The bill specifies a ban on delivering high-caliber weapons, long-range acoustic devices, grenade launchers, weaponized drones, armored vehicles, and explosives. The bill also would remove a requirement from the current surplus military equipment program that says local law enforcement officers must use the equipment they receive within a year. A bipartisan group of co-sponsors has signed on to the bill, including Maine co-sponsor Democratic U.S. Representative Hank Johnson of Georgia. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Schweitzer Engineering founder and CEO Edmund O. Schweitzer introduced a new CEO at a community open house in Pullman yesterday. At the Schweitzer Engineering Lab's 30th anniversary open house, Schweitzer introduced new CEO Louis DaCosta, who has been vice president for sales and customer services at the company. The Pullman-based company builds electric utility products and continues to grow in international markets, selling its products in 50 countries. Boise State University has announced it will change its events policy after the Idaho Freedom Foundation and American Civil Liberties Union of Idaho complained a security fee charged to sponsors of a pro-gun rights rally was unconstitutional. Boise State University charged student group Young Americans for Liberty $465 for security at a speech by gun rights advocate Dick Heller in May. BSU imposed the fee after a gun rights advocate called for those attending to bring their weapons. Boise State University attorney Kevin Satterley wrote in a letter to the groups, "We assure you that our policies were not written and are not applied for the purpose of restricting the expression of any viewpoint. However, we recognize that you have taken issue with the possibility that university officials could exercise discretion in a way that might violate a speaker's freedom of expression." BSU has suspended the enhanced security fee rule, and the university says it will now write revised rules. Democratic U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington has introduced a bill to remove the National Football League's nonprofit status if the league does not change the name of its Washington Redskins team, which plays home games in Washington, D.C. The National Congress of American Indians has also called for the team to change its name. The NFL is a 501c3 nonprofit, which is a category which gives tax exemptions to business leagues, chambers of commerce, and trade boards. Cantwell spokesperson Jared Leopold said Major League Baseball would not be affected by the bill despite the existence of the Cleveland Indians and Atlanta Braves team names because Major League Baseball is not a 501c6 nonprofit corporation. During last weekend's celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act at Wilderness Gateway Campground along the Locksaw River, the father of the modern wilderness movement, Stuart Brandborg, spoke. The 89-year-old Brandborg was assistant to Wilderness Society head Howard Zanizer in between 1956 and 1964, as Zanizer wrote the Wilderness Act. After Zanizer died in early 1964, Brandborg stood next to President Lyndon Johnson as the Wilderness Act was signed into law later that year. Brandborg then headed the Wilderness Society for more than a decade, spearheading efforts to add acreage to the wilderness system. Here's part of Brandborg's speech Saturday at Wilderness Gateway Campground, in which he spoke about current trends in the environmental movement.
I don't see leadership in the national environmental movement. Wildlife Federation, Audubon, Wilderness Society, National Parks, on down the list. I don't see strident advocacy out with folks like you. And these people should have regional offices that are building the flames and hitting the issues, protect our resources, all of them. From the public lands, the national forest parks, go down the list, the refuges, much neglected, and having a hell of a time in this period of financial crisis, low budgets, it's a struggle. So we need to go out to our folks. We need to have a national leadership. And I propose that we come up with a new mission. And I don't know how we're going to fire the engines. And maybe we will find somebody in Washington to do this. Wilderness Watch could do it. If we could get George off of the incomparably fine job he is saving the wilderness that's been dedicated, that's a great beachhead. But we now have this limitless need to build people to continue building the wilderness system. As you know, we've only got, two-thirds or a half of the job done. Many wildernesses have not been placed in the wilderness system. The 10-year schedule the wilderness law called for is only partially fulfilled. It all comes down to people. And you build circles with dedication and fire, and it'll happen. So the new Wilderness Alliance, I don't know where it'll come from. There must be some foundation, somebody who says, yeah, we're not here to sink the wilderness system. We're here to make it grow and prosper. We're not here to do anything but light the fire and good people. And the point there is that of not depending on leaders, but showing people how they can lead, showing how they individual. You know, there's a tendency with a fire flash super person like Dave Brower to say the Messiah. Well, the Messiah has to do, he's invaluable, she's invaluable, but you have to go the next step. Build people to take that leadership. Build the teams, and you have many Messiahs. And we're on that kick. We got to have one Democrat and one Republican. Get off of that hierarchical concept. We're talking democracy. We need Messiahs, every local town, every state, people who have one thing in mind. How can I build more people into this great social movement? That applies throughout democracy. Public health, education. Give what you know the foundation for bringing change to others. Ask them to learn what you've got plus what they know, but give it to others. Build people above all. So after all of this great opportunity I've had and the great opportunity to be with people of your incomparable commitment and dedication, that's where I am in life. Good people, building good people into the causes that will protect our resources and build our people into the participatory process of this unequal system that we live under. We've got to rejuvenate that process and across the board, whether it's wilderness or our society in its total expanse. We've got to show people how they can build, how they can bring other people in, how they can serve the needs of humanity in these priceless wild lands. So great to be with you, and I thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was former Wilderness Society head Stuart Brandborg, who helped write the Wilderness Act that was signed into law in 1964. The 89-year-old Brandborg was speaking Saturday at a celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act at Wilderness Gateway Campground along the Locksaw River in north-central Idaho. The event was organized by the Moscow-based group Friends of the Clearwater and other environmental groups. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, areas of smoke before 8 p.m., partly cloudy, low 55, 20% chance of showers tomorrow afternoon, partly sunny, high 80, west winds 5 to 15, becoming southeast, gusts up to 20, mostly cloudy, low 55 tomorrow night, west winds 5 to 15, becoming light, gusts up to 20. Partly sunny, high 76 on Friday, mostly clear Friday night, low 51, and clear skies Saturday through Sunday, high 80 Saturday, 86 on Sunday, low 53 Saturday night. Currently fair skies, 82 degrees in Moscow. Air quality from the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality real-time air monitoring shows unhealthy air conditions in Lewiston and unhealthy for sensitive groups conditions in Moscow, Kendrick, Cottonwood, and Grangeville. Potlatch moderate. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Between the Lines, a weekly news magazine, is coming up next, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And then at 7:30, we'll have This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming here every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow or buy raffle tickets to help with operating expenses and to pay our tower rent. Raffle tickets go for, the winner will win a Jamis Citizen 2 customizable bike from Rolling Hills Bikes on 6th Street, and tickets are $5 each or $5 for $20. You can purchase them at the radio station, 114 East 3rd Street. Enter via the alley. Afternoons and evenings are the best times to purchase the tickets. Or you can buy them at Moscow Farmers Market on Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in downtown Moscow at Friendship Square. Also from various KRFP DJs. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night.